Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be jumping into chapter 10 of 2 Kings, where Jehu, king of Israel, starts to clean house. In the previous chapter, we see that God fulfills his promises to Ahab and Jezebel to kill them and completely wipe out their family line. The alliance between the northern and southern kingdom was a threat to the preservation of the nation of Judah, largely because of the rank paganism that was seeping throughout. God was going to preserve the southern kingdom because Jesus, the Messiah, would come through that lineage of kings. Although they would lose their thrones, he would restore them eventually, but not in the way they expected. His throne would not be of this earth, but of heaven, and his reign would not be temporary, but last in eternity. And of his kingdom, there would be no end. But slow down, Turbo, we're not there yet. We just know where we're going because we've already read the end of the book, the New Testament. Spoiler alert! But today we'll see how politicians often use religion for their own political agendas. And I bet you've never seen that before. Hey, there's nothing new under the sun, and politicians have been using religion for thousands of years. The chapter starts off with Jehu killing off all of Ahab's family by getting the people to do it. He's a true politician, getting others to do his dirty work and then relabeling it, even though he issues the assassination decree in verses 1 through 8 of this chapter. He spins it in true politician doublespeak, presenting it as a revolution of the people. You can read that in verses 1 through 8, but let's jump into verse 9. The next morning, Jehu went out. He stood before all the people and said, "You are innocent. It was I who conspired against my master and killed him, but who killed all these? Know then, not a word of the Lord is spoken against the house of Ahab will fail. The Lord has done what he announced through his servant Elijah." So Jehu killed everyone in Jezreel who remained of the house of Ahab, as well as all his chief men, whose close friends and priests, leaving him no survivor. But then, he takes it to the next level. He doesn't just stop with the descendants of Ahab. No, Jehu goes after his friends and distant relatives as well. It's almost like he goes after his hairstylist, his dentist, his chiropractor as well. And God hadn't commanded all of that. But as we'll see in this chapter, Jehu is more concerned about his own agenda than he was of God's. And to be honest, he seemed to be using God just a little bit. But that's okay, because God might have been using Jehu too. His quoting of the Elijah prophecy in the previous chapter seems to have been more of a political justification than a religious motivation. And in verse 15 through 17, we see Jehu wanting to align himself with religious figures to lend credibility and legitimacy to his claim to power. In verse 15, we read, "After he left there, he came upon Jehonadab, son of Rechab, who was on his way to meet him. Jehu greeted him and said, 'Are you in accord with me as I am with you?' 'I am,' Jehonadab answered. 'If so,' said Jehu, 'give me your hand.' So he did, and Jehu helped him up into the chariot. And Jehu said, 'Come with me and see my zeal for the Lord.' Then he had him ride along in his chariot. When Jehu came to Samaria, he killed all who were left there of Ahab's family. He destroyed them according to the word of the Lord spoken to Elijah." Now Jehonadab, the man he asked to come into his chariot, was a Kenite, one of the descendants of Moses. They were from Judah and had remained faithful to the God of the Old Testament. Jeremiah actually talks about them in Jeremiah 35 a little bit. Here, Jehu rides all over with him in his chariot in the same way that politicians who want votes use religious figures and preachers to show that they're good people too, and love to appear in public with him and take photo opportunities. Years ago, Billy Graham, the famous evangelist, came to the conclusion that he was being used for political gain, more than he was to promote the gospel. It started when he began to branch out globally. Having preached against communism for years, he realized he was unable to get into those countries because he was speaking against their government. Billy decided he'd rather be a spokesman for the gospel than for capitalism. His views didn't change, but his practices did. He had to decide who he was going to stand for. And his conviction was he needed to represent the heavenly kingdom, for as Hebrews says, "Here we have no enduring city." The next change came when he awoke to the fact that rather than becoming Christians, the political candidates that were having him pray and speak at events were really using him to legitimize themselves and use him as a credibility badge, rather than truly wanting people to get saved. And because Billy Graham was one of the most trustworthy household names in America, he quickly realized his mistake. He further made a rule that he would not publicly affiliate with any political party from that moment on, or any political candidate. Instead, he would pray, if asked, and attempt to turn the nation to God, but he would no longer publicly endorse candidates. Regardless of parties, Democrat or Republican, he would come if asked, and it should not be seen, he made it clear, as an endorsement if he did. When he came, he represented the Lord. But that still didn't stop politicians from using him then, as they did, and Jehu did, in his day. It was a tight spot to be in. What would you do in Billy Graham's circumstances? Years ago, the Christian television stations were so riddled with false teaching that they started to ask prominent gospel Bible teachers to appear for free on their networks. It was the same idea. If we have a solid Bible teacher on here, they can legitimize the false teachers who are the real money makers. But unfortunately, for some Bible teachers, they chose to come on justifying it by saying, "But we get to preach the true gospel." Unfortunately, the rule was they could do that as long as they never contradicted the false teachers when they did. Again, what would you do? Make no mistake, there will be certain people out there who will want to use religious people, like yourselves. They will even want to use the Bible. Think of how many times you've heard a prominent public politician quote the Bible to their own ends. They wink and smile and tell us, "I'm one of you. I'm good people." But they don't understand the first thing about the gospel that says, "Hey, we ain't good people. That's why we need Jesus." Verse 18 picks up with Jehu's eradication of Baal worship, but not paganism itself. He was definitely still a pagan. Like many of the politicians that parade religious figures, he didn't change a bit. Verse 18, then Jehu brought all the people together and said to them, "Ahab served Baal a little. Jehu will serve him much. Now summon all the prophets of Baal and his servants, the priests. See that no one is missing, because I'm going to hold a great sacrifice for Baal. Anyone who fails to come will no longer live." But Jehu was acting deceptively in order to destroy the servants of Baal. Through Jezebel, the worship of Baal had infected the land, and rather than turning to the God of Judah, the northern kingdom of Israel continued to worship those two golden calves that Jeroboam had set up as idols, and said, "Behold the Lord your God." Remember that he's done this to keep the people following him in the north, since the temple was in the southern kingdom, and after the Civil War, when the country split in two, they needed the religion up north to keep the people happy and content so that they wouldn't defect and turn down to the south and leave the armies of the north. Verse 28, so Jehu destroyed Baal worship in Israel. However, he did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, which he caused Israel to commit the worship of the golden calves at Bethel and Dan. The Lord said to Jehu, "Because you've done well in accomplishing what is right in my eyes and have done to the house of Ahab all I had mind to do, your descendants will sit on the throne of Israel to the fourth generation." Yet Jehu was not careful to keep the law of the Lord, the God of Israel, with all his heart. He did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, which he'd called Israel to commit. In those days, the Lord began to reduce the size of Israel. With that verse in closing, we get a picture that God is going to reduce the nation and all their blessings as they reduce their worship of Him. Well, that's it for today, and I'll see you tomorrow on our journey through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.